Penguin Random House Audio presents The Lady in Glass and Other Stories by Anne Bishop. Read for you by Alexandra Harris and Gary Littman. To all the dreamers, readers, storytellers, and friends who have made this journey with me. Scribere, Latin meaning to write. The fleshy shrouds get peeled away, one by one. A crime of passion, an intimate murder performed with tender skill. The hand that holds the razor is my own and loves me, but cannot spare the bone. The bittersweet marrow I surrender to daylight, to feed the hungry, to heal myself. The early stories. Sometimes I receive an email from a person who wants to write, but feels discouraged after comparing their first stories to my novels. Apples and oranges, my darlings. You shouldn't compare fledgling stories to stories that are the result of years of effort to hone the writing craft, not to mention the thousands of pages of drafts that I've written over the past 30-some years. This section shows you some of my fledgling stories. The stories that helped me learn my craft as a writer. A note about finding inspiration. It can show up anytime, anywhere. For example, I was typing some copy at a day job many years ago and was supposed to type Hooting Guffaw. My fingers typed Hotting Fugum. I thought that would be an interesting name for a character, and a story grew out of that.
The Lady in Glass. Who was she, this one who sleeps in the glass coffin? How long has she slept? She is beautiful, so beautiful. Her hair is as black as a raven and looks as soft as the clouds. Her skin is as white as the elderman's best porcelain and unmarked by time or life. And yet her cheeks have the blush of a perfect apple, and her lips are as red as the most perfect rose. Her eyes, closed in her eternal sleep, are they blue with innocence, gray with wisdom, or dark with the mysteries of the world? Who was she? She came to us when the earth shifted one day, an unremarkable occurrence in our times. Some men from our village were out hunting. One moment, they were walking through a narrow pass between high grassy hills, and the next, they were sprawled on their backs as the earth trembled and one of the hills was sliced apart as cleanly as a sharp knife cuts through cake. And there she was. They could not believe what they saw. Cautiously, they climbed to where she lay, testing each foothold, lest their presence on the loosened earth cause a further slide that would bury them and her. As if in a dream, they used their guns as shovels and carefully eased her from the hill. When they returned to our village, they came not with the meat needed to fill hungry bellies, but with her. Sweating and struggling, they carried her back, fearing all the time that the smallest pebble, the merest twig, would cause one of them to stumble and overbalance the load, which would surely have ended in her destruction. The elderman ordered them to carry her into his house to protect her from the elements, particularly the harsh, hazy sun, and everyone crowded in to look at her. Even those who had never been permitted to cross his threshold before forgot propriety as elbow jostled rib and feet were trod on in the effort to get a better look. It took but a few minutes for a fight to break out, and when the bodies thudded against the long table the elderman's family dined on, the table on which the coffin lay, the elderman roared his disapproval and banished all but the council of elders from his house. Even after the door had been closed and barred and all the windows curtained, still, the villagers had stood outside, whispering among themselves and wondering. She is not like us. And yet she is. She is what we once were, before that terrible, terrible thing happened that is only called the Great Foolishness. A stupid name for that horror in the past that gnarled and bent us so, and yet miraculously left so much untouched. She is what we once were, tall and straight of limb, but we are all that's left of humankind. We are all that's left of man. We have a library in our village, a rare thing for so small a place. Books are precious. It is a week's travel to a city where they can be bought, and they are dearly priced. Still, we have a collection, a sign of communal affluence. Thrice each week, the historian, or one of his clerks, stands before the assembled village and reads from one of them. It is wonderful. When I was young, I wanted to be a clerk. I never dared aspire to be a historian. I had the intellectual gifts required, but my father, who had grown tired and uncaring, thought the field sufficient employment for me, and his second life mate, my mother died early, not an unusual occurrence among our wee men, was more interested in advancing the standing of her own child in our village than in tending to me. But he is already gone, and I am here, sitting through the night hours, keeping the lady company. But I ramble. 'Tis a sign of age. The elderman, tired of having the village underfoot whenever he tried to leave his house, he tired of faces trying to peer into his windows, so he ordered a viewing hall to be built where all could come and see the lady. Day after day they came to see her. The men came and stared, hungering for her beauty. The wee men came and stared, pain and hatred in their eyes. Every man has a duty to take a life mate. Our survival depends upon procreation. No small thing anymore, for if the great foolishness deformed and twisted the men, it was even crueler to those who hold the basket of our survival. They are so ugly. They are humped and bent, their limbs twisted and misshapen. Only their eyes are beautiful, deep and full of strange longings, half-remembered dreams. Men live with them to have a helpmate, to satisfy their body's needs, to hopefully produce a child. It is a great crime among us to desert a life mate. It is a social disgrace not to perform the marriage duty often enough for her to conceive. It is, at best, a trial for both parties. When a wee man feels the need for a man's body, and usually this is only a handful of days in the course of her blood time, she informs him of his duty. On these days, he is excused early from his day's work so that he is fresher, more fit, to provide the seed. At least once on each of these days, he lays his body down upon hers. Then, if they are lucky, her blood time will come and go, and the life within her will quicken. And if they are very lucky, they will have a child. If not, even the childra, the unchild, is allowed to suck once at its mother's breast, if it has a mouth to suck with, before being given a small vial of breelith, or dragon's breath, a sweet, deadly poison that works quickly and without pain. So the men would come to the viewing hall from the fields and stare, drinking her in, memorizing her before hurrying to their huts and their beds to perform their duty in a darkened room. One day, one of the wee men, having discovered that her life mate could no longer stand to do his duty for her without gazing first upon the lady, stood in the viewing hall before a large crowd and pondered aloud what the lady's life mate must have looked like. And they could all see him, taller than she, but built just as straight, limbs muscled and whole, darker skin than she, Skid.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?